the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks. Welcome to Beyond the Pits. I'm your host, as always, Phil Brown. And I'm really, really pleased to have on the show today the fantastic Gab Marcotti. I haven't had Gab on in a while, so it's always brilliant to have him on. One of the most intelligent rounded men in football. In whatever league you ask me about, there's much going to know. Always great to have him on the show. Gab, how you doing, pal?
Great to be with you.
Thank you so much. So much to talk about. I want to talk about a league that you love very much first. I want to talk about Serie A, because the transformation, Gab, in Serie A over the last 5-6 years, going back to whenever Fulham were beating Juventus in the Europa League, to what we're seeing now, the Italian League, one of the most exciting leagues in Europe. You've got money at the clubs now. Milan's got money. Both Milan clubs have got money. You're seeing a brilliant Napoli, Juventus, Roma, so many title contenders. This really is a massive transformation in Italy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I made the point that hit rock bottom in the aftermath of the Calciopoli scandal in 2006. And, you know, now we're seeing on the main, not everywhere, good owners and better governance. And, you know, really last season, I think, was a turning point in terms of like the belief in kids, the belief in attacking football as something that, you know, is very real. It's exciting. I mean, there's a tremendous crop of young players. It's hard to say whether Juventus, will not win the title this year, but there certainly are a number of contenders and teams that are really fun to watch, from Napoli to, all the new players at Milan, although they still have a bunch of things to figure out and still a question mark about, the ownership situation, to Roma themselves, who, again, I think quite progressive, taking gambles. And I think as a league, it's definitely on the up.
We have a big game this weekend, of course, Juventus-Torino. Two teams doing quite well, Juventus sitting second, of course, will join top. And Torino have had a good start themselves, still unbeaten, 3 wins, 2 draws, good win last week. Of course, the superstar in Torino is Belotti, that everyone has got their eye on. How do you see this Turin derby this weekend, Cam?
It's the old cliche about the derby being difficult to predict and blah, blah, blah. I think you've earned a difficult spot because, and this happens, I mean, it happened last year too, where we really only saw the best of Juve in the new year. He believes that you have to play with wingers in Europe. But at this point, from Juve's standpoint, it really is about making your mark in the Champions League and winning the Champions League, getting into a third time lucky situation. So obviously in the summer they added Douglas Costa and Bernardeschi. They've got Piazza to come back from injury. There's Cuadrado around, and I think the plan is to sort of go 4-2-3-1 on, permanently with Dybala in the hole. But it's definitely a work in progress because you have an issue in terms of who plays in front of the back four. Sami Khedira, of course, is injured, as is Claudio Marchisio. That's not a great situation to be in. He's got a ton of choice because, just in that central midfield position, of course, he also has guys like Blaise Matuidi, who they just signed, Miralem Pjanic, Sturaro. So he's got a lot of options in a lot of different positions, and now he's got to sit there and find the right mix and find the right tactical balance. And, it took him a while to do it last year. And it could take a while this year too, especially with Higuain starting the season slowly and whatnot. When I look at this game, I think it's potentially a trap game for Juve because they'll be looking ahead to the Champions League as well, having suffered that heavy defeat at the hands of Barcelona. in match day one. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be quite tough for Juve.
One of the big questions, Gav, for people who don't watch Serie A every week is how good is Andrea Belotti? So a flat start this season already, 3 goals, 5 games. How good is this kid?
Well, I think he's definitely the kind of guy who coaches love, because, you know, he has an engine. He's one of those center forwards who provides enormous amounts of work rate. I don't want to be unkind and say he's the polar opposite to Higuain, but, you know, in many ways, he really is the guy who's continually making runs, making intelligent runs. And, you know, I wasn't sure about his finishing ability until 2-3 years ago, when all of a sudden he just started, you know, scoring everywhere. But he's somebody who will make a contribution even when he's not scoring. And of course, he scores a ton. So I think that's why people really rate him. He just has this drive. I don't think, you know, he's not as technically gifted as Higuain or Aguero or guys like that. But he's often in the right place at the right time. He plays with enthusiasm. He plays with abandon. And he's one of those guys who, and it's unusual for a center forward, is also incredibly unselfish.
I want to ask you about another team that's playing exceptionally well, Napoli. Sorry, doing a fantastic job there. Dries Mertens last week against Lazio. They looked amazing. They give a heading to Lazio 4-1. Is this team for real, Gab? Can they win the Scudetto this year?
I think they can. I think a lot of things are going to have to come together for it to happen. Notably, Juventus to take their eye off the ball, maybe because they go into deep run in the Champions League or whatnot. But they really are an absolute joy to watch, and they play some of the best football in Europe. And you know, when people talk about sort of hyper tactical managers, you know, making a difference, I think you have a multiplier effect with the players. And, you know, Insigne, Mertens, and Callejon they're great players, mm-hmm. but they're not superstars. And yet they're producing like superstars. And that's down to the system that they play. You know, throwing a guy like Jorginho in midfield, who again is just such a wonderful passer of the ball, so good at controlling games. And you've got a really, really good unit. I think what they need to do is, and he tried this in the Champions League against Shakhtar Donetsk when he played Milik up front, you know, sort of a big target man instead of Dries Mertens. So I think, you know, try to add another dimension in the way they play. If they can do that, then yeah, I think they can win a Serie A title.
The other one that's had a decent start, of course, is Inter. Spalletti bringing some semblance of stability to Inter. Drew last week, of course, against Bologna. But Inter sitting there, what is it, third, I think they're sitting in. 4 wins in the draw, their first 4 games. How authentic are Inter, Gab?
So I think Spalletti's definitely an upgrade as a coach. You know, he's sort of a manager. The pluses are that, you know, with Skriniar has been, you know, he's carried that defense. He's certainly tightened them up a lot. And going forward, Icardi, this looks like the season in which he just means business. You know, he obviously scored a lot of goals the last 2 seasons, but, you know, there's always issues, stupid behavior off the pitch, his girlfriend, you know, he was just a little odd. And maybe he's still a little odd, but he looks super motivated, super fit, and he really is a value added, because I think he is one of the best center forwards in the world. The issue for me right now is in the middle of the pitch, where, you know, Inter are where they're in a great position in the league, but they've not played particularly well, in my opinion. They've only done it in spurts, and, you know, guys like Vecino and Borja Valero, they're good players. They've got Gagliardini, but, you know, they need to be doing it on a regular basis. Perisic has to be consistent. And I don't think he's quite found that balance yet, where these people kind of all perform all perform as a team and all get things done.
Their rivals across town are Milan, of course, spent a lot of money in the summer gap, bringing in a lot of new players, with the exception of a heavy loss to Lazio, although the fixture's been relatively kind to them at the start of the season. They've had a good start. What would you say, how would you rate their start, Gab? Is this something where you could look at Milan and say, with all the strength they've brought in, this is a team that is a top three, top four team?
Well, they pretty much have to be top four because otherwise they're going to run into serious trouble in terms of paying back the loan that they got to take over the club. So there's a whole cloud there, and there's financial fair play issues as well. You know, you look at the players they signed this summer, and, you know, on the main, they're all good players, and they got them at good prices. And, you know, people like Kessie, like Andre Silva, like... Conte, who, you know, is injured now, but, you know, will come back and be better together with some of those veterans like Shalanoglu, like Bonucci.
Yeah.
They have a manager who I love in Montella, but he's still finding the right balance. And I think one of the things that maybe hurts him a little bit is they have a lot of sort of similar players, you know, Lucas Biglia and Montolivo, or, you know, Jack Bonaventura and Calhanoglu. You know, do you really kind of need sort of two of everything? And would you have been better off maybe in, and, you know, there's different reasons why they had it, but he's got a big squad, and I think in some places, you know, he's not a very well put together team, even though they signed very good players, in my opinion, in the summer.
Let's switch your attention over to France, Ligue 1. I want to ask you about this ridiculous situation with Neymar and Cavani. It seems Neymar has apologized. They've done the modern thing of falling out. It used to get a slap in the face in the training pitch. Now they unfollow each other. And it looks like they unfollowed each other. Could PSG's undoing possibly be this collection of superstars, egos, where you've got them fighting over penalties? Is that the only thing that could undo them?
Undo them in the league? Mm. Possibly, yeah. But I think they have this broader issues. This is a badly constructed squad. You look at sort of central midfield, and, you know, and I wrote this for ESPN multiple times. You know, you have Verratti, who's a great player, but, you know, has injury and disciplinary issues. You have Thiago Motta, who's 35 years old and has had injury issues. You have Rabiot, great player, never started more than 22 games, I think, in a season in his career, and he is young. And behind them, you have Nkunku, who's, I think, 19 years old, and that's it. And at center back, at center half, it's the same position. You know, if you have a situation where one guy is injured and one guy is suspended, and it's possible because Thiago Silva is not getting any younger, then all of a sudden you're moving Thiago Motta to center half, and then you're creating a hole in midfield, and you have a 35-year-old foul-prone guy at center back. I don't see how this team could have been put together so badly. Whereas, meanwhile, you've got a whole abundance of talent up front. You know, I think they really blew it, actually, in the summer. You know, and Neymar and Mbappe, and that's why I included them among my transfer window losers, and to scorn for that. But I really believe that. You know, I don't see how you can, you know, if you want to go and roll the dice and bet on Mbappe and Neymar, absolutely, you know, great. You're bold, it's a big move, but you know you've got financial fair play. You know you have a totally top-heavy squad with talented players like Lucas Moura, like Ben Arfa, Draxler, and then makes Di Maria. Some of these dudes are never going to play.
Yeah,
you had to sell some of them, and you didn't do that. You failed to even just bring in a body at the back, you know, to be a fourth center half. That's not a good situation to be in. And you have this ridiculousness with Cavani and Neymar, and that is just appalling from Unai Emery. I mean, Mm-hmm. It's bad behavior from Neymar, and even more so from Dani Alves, who really should know better. There's no reason to go and humiliate Cavani like that. I mean, he's your teammate.
Right.
But most of all, it's Unai Emery. And then for Unai Emery to come out and say, like, oh, well, but they'll sort it out among themselves. You know, no. No, you're the freaking manager. Every normal team in the world has, like, you know, a hierarchy of set piece takers. You decide. And to have this guy who's just so afraid to go and make a decision because he doesn't, I don't know who he's afraid of upsetting. I mean, if I'm, you know, if I'm the chairman, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, I go in there and I nail freaking Unai Emery to the wall. And I say, I am paying you to manage this team. Now go and do your freaking job right now. I don't know. I could be, this is just a hunch. It's just speculation on my part. I think that what happened is that after 5 years of sort of steady growth under Nasser, somebody above Nasser in Qatar said, wait a minute, you know, we spent all this money. Why aren't we winning the Champions League? We're not winning the league title. Look, let's go and sign in Neymar and Mbappe. Here's the money. Nasser, you go figure it out. And I think they put pressure on him, and I think he had to relent. And that's why, you know, they picked up Nasser and Mbappe, but they weren't able to make the other moves that they needed to make to have a balanced team, let alone satisfy financial fair play. And we'll see how things turn out on that front.
Yeah, because they've already committed 180 million of next season spending on Mbappe. You're just thinking, well, how do you do that without selling a lot of your players and addressing some of the key issues that exist in this team? And you're right, you know, you see how much a quality defensive midfielder has transformed Manchester United. And it looks like you're dealing with a whole different team when Matic plays. Getting rid of Matuidi was a head-scratcher for me. I'm looking at this going, that's a really paper-thin defensive midfield that the top clubs in Europe, I think, will exploit. And over the course of a season, yeah. I doubt PSG will get away with that in the Champions League.
The starters are fine. But the problem is the bench. And you know as well as I do, if your benchmark is the Champions League, you need to prepare for contingencies. You get into a situation where, you know, you're playing a return leg in the quarterfinals against Man City or Barcelona or whatever, and all of a sudden you get unlucky and you have injuries and suspensions. That could cost you the season, you know. And already he's had to change the 4-3-3 to try to, you know, shoehorn Draxler into the team. And I don't know. It's, you know, again, they may well walk Liga for obvious reasons, but I think it's going to be a different story in Europe. And I think it's going to be remembered as a real missed opportunity.
Diego Costa is going to Atletico Madrid. Will sign, obviously, and start playing in January. Is it possible that affects Antoine Griezmann's situation in January?
Well, first of all, what I have to say is to be able to sell a guy in that situation and get $50 million back, that is just yet another masterstroke, I think, from Chelsea.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just brilliant. I don't see Griezmann moving in January because I think Atleti want to take a serious run at the Champions League. And if you think about it, I mean, Diego Costa shows up fit and productive and happy. That's a scarily good team and a team that's built for the Champions League knockouts. And if I had to name, you know, one outsider, although, you know, I don't know if we want to consider them an outsider given how close they've come before, but, you know, somebody other than the usual suspects, I would choose Atletico Madrid because they have the Champions League experience. They're very well suited to sort of the two-legged format. And if you add Diego Costa in there, and if he's happy and productive, you know, to go with Griezmann and Saul and Oblak and the other guys they have, all of a sudden, you know, I think they become really a top team in the Champions League. So I think it's tremendous. I think if Griezmann moves, he's going to move in the summer. And the fact that he lowered his release clause again, I think suggests to me that, you know, he's unofficially done a deal with the club saying, all right, I'm going to stick around. We'll have the new stadium. We'll be one big family. and then, you know, a year from now, I'm out of here.
We'll see what happens there. Ernesto Valverde was big concerns coming into the season. Gab went to Barcelona, question marks about, well, obviously losing, they had a terrible summer, losing Neymar, missed out on most of the major key signings that they wanted to make. Dembele picks up an injury. He's obviously going to be out for a few weeks. But they've had a superb start to the season. 17 goals, 4-2 against Messi, showing how brilliant he is continuously. Were those fears unfounded?
No, they're not unfounded. The fears are all still very real. I think you can also throw in the fact that you had a situation where everybody thought that Lionel Messi had signed a new contract, and then they were rather embarrassingly forced to reveal that no, he hasn't signed a new contract, and on June 30th, if he doesn't sign, he can walk away as a free agent. Now, nobody believes that that's happened, that that's going to happen, but you know, the fact that he still hasn't signed says to me quite clearly that Messi's saying, hang on a minute, I want some changes at this club and in the way it's run, and I want to maintain my clout, and I'm not going to be used by Bartomeu to say everything's fine. I look at their start of the season and, you know, well, first of all, they're not going to go to being a terrible team overnight. But by the same token, it really has been Messi carrying them. What is it like? You know, he scored like 12 goals already, something stupid like that. Yeah. And remember, you have Luis Suarez, who's not productive. He was injured and he's not been good since he's come back. Now Dembele's out. De La Feo, still not convincing to me. You know, Iniesta blows hot and cold. I mean, at his age, entirely understandable. You put these things together, and I don't know, even with that 7-point lead, I still think Real Madrid are the favorites to win La Liga. I still definitely lean towards them, and I still think Barcelona have serious issues that they need to address.
Although Real Madrid have had an indifferent start, losing against Betis as well, drawing against Levante, drawing against Valencia. You did write a fantastic article on Marco Asensio, who looks just a superb, superb talent, that kid. Why have Real Madrid had such an indifferent start?
Honestly, and I kind of realize this more and more as I get older, I weigh performances higher than I do results, because performances, I think, give you a hint of what's to come, whereas results just kind of tell you what's happened. I mean, simply put, I think Real Madrid have been generally unlucky. You know, that Betis game is a game they should have won, but you know, they ran into a goalkeeper in Adan who stood on his head on the day, and Ramos made a stupid mistake at the end, and so, you know, that results in a home loss. Stuff happens. Ronaldo's been suspended until now. You know, I think we need to look past that and just recognize that sometimes teams are just unlucky, and I really think Real Madrid thus far have been unlucky. And look, you know, you mentioned Asensio. I wrote about for ESPN. It's up on the site. Asensio is their second best player off the bench. You know, and he's a ridiculously good footballer. That just tells you what their riches are. You know, when you can call upon Isco and Asensio off the bench, and by the way, it doesn't make sense to call them bench players, but, you know, if Isco plays, then that means that Bale's on the bench, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at it that way. They just have so many riches, and I think, you know, they've moved well in the summer. They've signed really good younger players, and I think they'll come good.
Superb performances, very unlucky. Sounds like you're channeling Jurgen Klopp to me, but okay.
Except for the performances part.
They've been. I thought they were unlucky against Sevilla. I thought they were unlucky against Burnley. But you know, no defense.
Yeah, but they weren't. They were unlucky against Burnley. I wouldn't say they were superb against Burnley.
Yeah.
And Klopp is the good German in my world. You know, I want him to do well.
Yeah.
But you know, how you can put a team together like this? You know, and it's weird because I think back. You know. They're getting slaughtered here in England for their defending.
Mm-hmm.
But geez, I remember his Borussia Dortmund teams. They didn't defend this badly. And I think it's a combination of system, and it's made worse by the personnel. You know, Matchup is a central midfielder who is playing in central defense.
Yeah.
Lovren has had issues going back to his time at Lyon. The third center back is somebody named Ragnar Klavan. The fourth center back, I don't even know who it is. Would it be Emre Can at this point? Is he their fourth center half? Am I forgetting somebody brilliant who's not there? They're hurt by the fact that, you know, Nathaniel Klein's not there, and then that's going to help. It's difficult, I think, it's got to be frustrating to look at the personnel. Great personnel can basically save your rear end.